We are about to experience a moment in history that will be talked about for centuries to come. The bishops of the Holy Orthodox Church will be gathering on Pentecost to convene a holy and great council. It's been 1,200 years since anything of this magnitude has taken place. We know our listeners have questions regarding the occasion, so we've invited Father Nathaniel to be with us today. Father Nathaniel is the director of the Department of Inter-Orthodox Ecumenical and Interfaith Relations for the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese of America, and also the executive assistant to the chairman of the Assembly of Canonical Orthodox Bishops of the United States of America. Welcome, Father Nathaniel.
Thank you, Father Chris. Christ is risen.
Truly, he's risen. Father, there's been dialogue concerning this council, I believe. Well, there's been dialogue for centuries, but in-depth and preparation of all kinds of documents, I think, since the 20s. So what does a council of this nature require? Why does it require so much planning?
That's a great question. I think you kind of answered the question in your introduction. I mean, this is the first time the Orthodox Church is going to be convening such a council in about 1,200 years since the last ecumenical council. Of course, there have been other councils that have been convened along the way. However, in the recent past, at least several centuries, we have not done this. The churches have mostly been isolated, focusing on internal issues, and therefore have never come together on a pan-Orthodox kind of global scale. So it's taken time because the church has been learning along the way how to actually function conciliarly in a conciliar manner. So we're rediscovering our kind of global conciliar voice. So it's taken some time. The church is trying to do the right thing and to get it correct as best as it can in terms of a process the first time around.
And it's hard for us who live in 30-second soundbite world to comprehend this kind of timing. Let's go for a minute to the actual naming of it. It's called a Holy and Great Council, not an ecumenical council. Can you tell us why the difference and what is the difference?
Yes, that's an ecumenical council, as we know, the church has only seven ecumenical councils. It does not name any council ahead of time an ecumenical council. The ecumenical councils were not convened as ecumenical councils when they first met. Nicaea was not convened as an ecumenical council. The church later gives it that designation. Therefore, the church could not necessarily say we're going to convene an ecumenical council. The name of the council, the Holy and Great Council, the designation, describes exactly what this is. It is a holy council because it's a council of the church, and in many ways, all councils, therefore, are holy. And it is a great council because of its magnitude. It is a universal council. It brings in, in this regard, it brings in representation from all the 14 autocephalous churches and will deal with issues related to orthodoxy at large. So it is holy and it is great, and therefore that's how it's known officially.
Okay. Now, in the past, if my history is correct, all of the bishops were invited to attend the councils. Now, in this particular council, we're seeing that there's each patriarchate and bringing autocephalous churches, bringing 24 bishops. Why is that?
Well, there might be some clarification that's needed for some of the listeners. Not every council included every single bishop in the past.
Okay.
That's not the case. I mean, many of us might think that is the case, and it wasn't the case for many of the ecumenical councils. For practical reasons and for pastoral reasons, for the most part, bishops were not all able to attend. If all bishops were to leave their dioceses, their metropolises, and travel in the ancient times to some part of Asia Minor, for days or weeks at a time, who would shepherd the flock? I mean, so we have to understand that it's not the case that all bishops were always present at every single council. In this case, we have all of the autocephalous churches present, and the hierarchs, the primates, agreed that the best way to have adequate representation and yet allow for the work of the church locally to continue would be to have a set amount of hierarchs in each delegation. So they agreed that 24 plus the primate would be the number for each church, or at least up to that amount, because they don't. Not every church has 24 hierarchs. Some have less. Right. And the number 24 was chosen symbolically because that is the number of elders around the throne of the Lord in the Book of Revelation. So symbolically, they chose the number 24.
Now, there's also the fact that these councils in years ago lasted 4 years. It wasn't a 10-day or a 9-day circumstance. Is that correct?
That is correct. There are some times when councils just continued. It did not end after a week or 10 days or a month. There is a set amount of time that the churches have designated for the work, but we're not sure. I mean, it may be the case that the work of this particular council continues on into the next council. But indeed, this time around, they tried to find some kind of a schedule that would work with everyone and would help them focus their work and attention as best they can.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about which bishops from the United States of America, because that's who we are and that's who this program originates. Which ones are going and how were they chosen?
Well, that's a great question, Father Chris. And actually today, the Ecumenical Patriarchate officially announced its delegation. However, of course, in America, there are hierarchs from a number of different jurisdictions and presences and so forth. But I can say the following. From the United States, as far as I know and officially, we have Archbishop Demetrius of America. We have Metropolitans Hierosimos of San Francisco, Alexios of Atlanta, Nicholas of Detroit, Isaiah of Denver, Metropolitan Nikitas of the Dardanelles, who's out in California at the Berkeley Athenagora Center. We also have other hierarchs from other jurisdictions, including Bishop Maxim of the Serbian Archdiocese of the West. We have Bishop Gregory of Nyssa, the head of the Carpatho-Russians in the United States, and we have Metropolitan Anthony, the head of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church here in the United States. So as of now, at least, there are about 9 or 10 officially going from the United States. That does not mean that there couldn't be others there that we just don't know about just yet.
Okay. So that's quite a diverse group, and that's wonderful. So we have a very good, strong representation there. I'm happy to see that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And each church and each patriarchate will select its own delegation, just to be clear. So the Ecumenical Patriarchate selected its own hierarchs. The Church of Serbia, for example, elected its 24, and of the 24, it asked Bishop Maxim, who's in America, to be part of their delegation.
And the Antiochian will do theirs, and the Bulgarian will do theirs,
absolutely,
correct?
Yes. Okay. Each church will have the opportunity to select their own.
Well, in the past, and we brought this up in our conversation, one of the obstacles in communication was simply the physical distances between the patriarchates. The other was the language. So how do you think modern technology is going to help or hinder this communication at this particular council?
That's important. The means of communicating today, as you correctly pointed out, they have become incredible assets, facilitating the way we communicate in the church, within the church, and the church with the world. But they, at times, they can also become obstacles. And if I can guess, we can say, you know, for the Holy Council, the fact that we have technology that allows for instant translations, of the proceedings in the working and official languages of the council to allow all the participants from all over the world to understand exactly what each one is saying, that's a plus. That's a great benefit of technology. The fact that we can communicate with the world instantly, official texts, official documents, announcements, to offer them resources to the world and to our parishes, that through the internet, through the websites, through channels like OCN, that is a positive. We help our communities, our faithful, and the rest of the world who's looking at us, we help them stay informed. However, we also have things that can get in the way, and technology has been used in inappropriate ways to advance agendas or to advance individual personal ideologies. So we have, you know, for example, today everyone has a platform to write. Everyone has the ability to start a blog, to post things on the web, to make statements, and there isn't anyone to stop or to check, to do fact-checking to see whether or not what he or she says is accurate. So we do have things out there. You know, it's great. Most of the material out there that's circulating on the web is positive. It's factual. But there are instances more and more where people are just, you know, expressing their opinion and, you know, doing so as if it represents an official position of the church. And it's not just, this doesn't happen just around the council. This happens every single day of our lives. I mean, when somebody speaks on Twitter, on Facebook, on their blog, and kind of adds a patristic quote or makes a reference to a biblical passage, you know, many times people who are uninformed or not informed well enough may think that that is something that the church believes, that that is the official position of the church. And so we have to be quite careful. And so my recommendation is that people follow official channels of the council, in this case, official channels of the individual patriarchates, because that's where they can find factual, truthful, and honest material. Everything else is, you know, an interpretation, and sometimes those interpretations are good and well-intended. Other times they could be harmful.
Let's go with the official language or languages of the conference. Which languages will they be coming out in?
Well, the official languages of the council, as the preconciliar process has determined, those are Greek, French, Russian, and English. The primates have also included Arabic as a working language, as many of the hierarchs do come from the Middle East, where their mother tongue is Arabic. So they will be translating the proceedings in Arabic. But the official texts and materials will be coming out in those four languages, Greek, English, Russian, and French.
Okay. Now, we know that over time, a number of issues were being discussed, and they've been whittled down now. I wonder if you could address briefly, because that's the only time that we have, we can't get into a detailed discussion of each of these areas, but if you could mention those areas and tell us a little bit about each one, that'd be helpful.
Sure. So the council has six main topics that it will address. There were more in the past. At times there were as many as 100 that were whittled down and grouped together into 10. And of those 10 agenda items, we have currently six that are issues that will be studied and addressed at the council. Those include the Orthodox diaspora, okay, the issue of autonomy, church autonomy, and how it is proclaimed, the sacrament of marriage and its impediments, the importance of fasting in today's world, the relations of the Orthodox Church with the rest of the Christian world, and of course, lastly, but I would say perhaps even most importantly, the mission of the church in today's world. Some of these have to do with internal administration. For example, the diaspora and autonomy. Those are kind of more internal regulations, administration of the church. There are other issues that are more pastoral in nature. Those include, of course, marriage and fasting. And then there are other matters, two topics that are kind of outward looking. So the relationship of that the Orthodox Church has with the rest of the Christian world and its mission, the mission of the church in the world today, that has to, those two have to do with the presence of the church in the world, and it looks outward.
Father, this sounds like a gathering of bishops, which it is, hierarchs of the church as we refer to them. I imagine they're going to have support staff there as well. The laity per se, in the general sense, is really in a position of having to listen and watch and do what? Pray, I would think, for this, the success of this event, correct?
Well, prayer is important, and prayer should be coming and offered from everyone in the church, I mean, not just the laity. So we're all called to prayer. However, I would also say that the laity has a very, very important role to play in all of this. And although, you know, there are churches, hierarchical, and synods are comprised of bishops, and it is the case that decisions in the life of the church on a synodal level are only taken by bishops, the laity has always had a central role in the life of the church and around councils. In our particular council that's coming, the laity has the ability to study, to organize discussions around what is going to be discussed at the council. The laity has the, you know, responsibility to help teach others. And of course, there will be lay participation at the council itself. So not just at our parish levels, but at the council, there will be lay men and women who are participating either as consultants, okay, for each church. Each church is allowed to have up to 6 consultants, and many of them have asked the laity to be part of the consulting body. But also there are countless men and women who are helping organize logistics, communications of the council. So the laity has a central role. And lastly, following the council, once the council has concluded its work, the laity is going to receive the work of the council. The laity is going to find ways to implement this in their lives. So the work of the council is as important, is really important when it comes to the rubber hitting the road, and that's on a parish level in the lives of our people. So I would not just say the laity is called to prayer, although that is important and central and of the utmost importance. The laity has a greater role to play as well in kind of making things work, in receiving things, in implementing decisions of the council.
Very good. Anything else you'd like to add, Father Nathaniel?
Well, I would say if anyone is looking for further information about the council, they can, of course, visit the official website of the Holy and Great Council, which is holycouncil.org. And also, you can visit the press office website of the Ecumenical Patriarchate that offers a number of resources for all people, and that's orthodoxcouncil.org. So the official website is holycouncil.org, and the press office of the Ecumenical Patriarchate is orthodoxcouncil.org.
Father Nathaniel, thank you very much for being with us. We will see you in Crete because, as you know, I'm going to join the staff over there to offer commentary on the 19th, the Liturgy of Pentecost, and then on the 26th, I'm honored to be joining that team of people. We'll be offering the commentary for those two divine liturgies, hierarchical divine liturgies, that will also be sent out through interpreters in 5 languages as well. Thank you, Father Nathaniel, for being with us.
Thank you, Father Chris. I look forward to seeing you in Crete.
Very good. Thank you.